55 on Wednesday, August 24th. So hopefully this works, and we'll get a good recording of the screen and my voice, not a picture of me. I don't think a picture of me is particularly helpful relative to other things, but we will have recordings of the screen and the audio. All right, so today, well, we did this exercise last year for the first time in this course, and it worked, I think, pretty well. So what we're going to start with, rather than sort of going through the slides for chapter one, we're going to start by, let's invent the internet. All right? So that's the class's exercise for today. We won't invent the whole internet, but we'll deal with a few of the issues that crop up in creating an internet. And so now what have I done with my pen? This very special pen that I need to write on this. Okay, so how did it come about? Well, way back in around 1840, a man named Samuel F.B. Morse invented the telegraph. At least that's the American story of how the telegraph was invented. Other countries have other stories, but Samuel Morse invented the telegraph. And what was the telegraph? The telegraph was actually a very simple simple thing electrically, right? It had a battery, it had some long wires, that's interesting. It had a switch with a little tab on it. It had a coil. Don't like my coil very well. It had a coil. It had an armature attached to a piece of metal and another piece of metal. And what happened? Right? When you press the key, the magnet pulls down the piece of metal and it makes the piece of metal hit on the other piece of metal and you get a click, right? That's how the telegraph works. Very simple. Not really very much to it. All of the cost, of course, involved building batteries at the time, finding wire at the time, right? Wire was not something that you could just go out and buy by the mile at the time. But very simple. Okay, so what problems are associated with even this very simple notion of long distance? Well, any electrical engineers in the room? I thought there were a few electrical engineers. Nobody willing to admit it? All right, well, everybody had to take physics 202, so even the computer scientists in the room should know the basics of this. What happens when you make a current run through wire? Well, even before that. What?
Heat.
Why is there heat? Because there's resistance in the wires. And what does that mean? That means that the amount of current that you can make go through that coil decreases as the distance gets larger. So what can we do about problems? So that's our first exercise in inventing the internet, is what can we do about making it possible to communicate over longer distances using the telegraph, given that we have resistance in the wires that limits the amount of distance that we can go. Okay, so what I want you to do is get in groups of three-ish and see if you can come up with some solutions to making this very simple network work over, make it possible with this long network to communicate over longer distances. So just take a couple minutes to brainstorm about that.
Or that's what
I remember I did really well on the final lab, and then when I was taking the final exam, I didn't remember a goddamn thing. And
And you can be kind of wild about this. You don't have to confine yourself
Do we have to work in the era of
sort of more in the realm of intelligence.
You know he's trying to keep the system.
Well, you can suggest fiber
optics. I
mean, I guess the way
that
it is. Let's just fast forward to
Okay, so what do we have? Maybe from the back of the room. What's one way to make this work over a longer distance? It needs to be louder by hearing it's not that great, and it's kind of noisy here. Use a repeater. So what would a repeater look like for the telegraph?
Maybe something like this. We mechanically attach that to another switch, another battery, another coil. You get the picture, right? A repeater, all right?
Great idea. Something we use in the internet. What else could we use?
Step up the voltage.
A higher voltage. So, yes, that's something we could do. It sort of has limits caused by the availability of batteries, the ability to use the thing over different distances and so forth. But yeah, stepping up the voltage will possibly let us do something else. What else?
Reduce the distance of the wire.
Ah, better wires, right? Superconducting wires, why not? I said we don't have to buy ourselves a 1840. Keon was going for fiber optic cables. I think again, we don't have to confine ourselves to 1840. But essentially, lower loss cables. What's another way that even was possible in 1840 to get lower loss cables?
Increase the diameter of the cable.
Bigger cables, right? Again, expense. And you know, you're making a bigger cable, which is more expensive per foot to go many more feet, and so those costs mount up. What else? Yeah?
Isn't there quantum coupling?
We could be a little more practical. So don't confine yourself to just thinking about purely electrical solutions to this. What else could we do if we wanted to communicate over longer distances? We don't have...
Use a letter?
What? How about having an operator sitting here? Excuse my drawing capabilities. An operator sitting here copying down the message and then retransmitting it. That's different from a repeater. Right? The repeater sends every click one right after the other. This one, the operator collects the message and resends it. Okay? So the first one is called what's known in networking as maybe cut-through routing. Every bit gets sent as soon as it arrives. The second one is called store and forward delivery or relay, because the operator stores the message on a piece of paper and then resends the whole thing. A funny book, if you're into reading sort of comedy fantasy, Maybe some of you know this book by Terry Pratchett called Going Postal. And the premise of the book is that they have invented networking using towers with blinking lights and blinking shutters, actually, not lights, blinking shutters. And they have this whole system built around store and forward messaging with operators in the towers. Anyway, it's very funny, and it's the reference for today's lecture, if you are so inclined. Okay, I think we have some good... Another possibility here, now that I think of it, is we could put out somehow what's known as an electronic amplifier in here that would operate instead of at the level of the dits and dahs of the actual currents being sent through the wires. So that's another possibility. Again, not in 1840, because amplification had been invented in 1840 for electronics, but that's another possibility. Okay, so we have ways to go farther using repeaters and relays. Next problem, new page. Next problem. Suppose I want to communicate with multiple destinations. All right. So, the idea here is not that I want to send, it's not that I want to do a newspaper where I send the same thing to everybody at once, but rather I just want the ability to communicate with multiple different destinations. What would I do? Okay, so 2 minutes. What are some ideas about how that could be done? Okay. So, what do we got as ways to communicate with multiple destinations? Yeah.
So, like a switchboard.
A switchboard. All right. So, where it is. Somehow we have something here in the center, and when we want to communicate to a particular destination, we turn the dial to attach that destination to the telegraph key. My drawing is not all that wonderful, but you sort of get the idea that we have a switch that lets us attach the key to different destinations. Of course, we could have completely different circuits for everybody and have multiple keys, depending on what we wanted to do. This might be easier. What else? Yeah? Okay, so that's sort of inverting the problem, but that's sort of where I want to go with this, right? Suppose I have multiple places that can send messages to multiple destinations. They might all
be attached in what we call a star topology. And in order for A to send to B, A first sends to E, and at E, well, different things could happen at E, right? We could have, again, a switch to directly connect A to B, or we could have store and forward, in which case there's an operator who collects the message and does that. Just for grins, in the early telephone system, that's what they did, right? So this is about 1914, I think, in a large city. This was women's work at the time. Women were starting to enter the workforce, and this was considered something that women could do. The women standing behind the others are the supervisors who, will monitor any misbehavior, help out with any problems, put people on reports. It was not great work. You know, it was not easy work, right? There were high expectations. Anyway, we'll come back to that idea in a little bit. Okay, so we could do store and forward like that. With a star topology, what else could we do?
I was thinking like a bandpass filter. So it'll filter out different frequencies at the destination.
Oh, so we're going to send different tones for different destinations or something.
Yeah.
Sure, okay.
So-called frequency division multiplying.
Different colors of light, different frequencies of sound or radio frequency. I heard an idea over here that I haven't heard come up yet.
Is that the relay?
I think you were talking about
these tappers at different locations. And so when I send at the left side at all of the locations, the clickers click and everybody can copy down the message. Okay? That's an idea. It's called a bus topology. What else? Suppose everybody wants to send to everybody else. Yeah.
Just
have them connected in a circle. Okay. So everybody wants to send to everybody else. Somehow you put everybody in a circle. And maybe when you're the one who's sending, you open a switch, and well, let's put it this way: when you're not the one who's sending, you close your key, right? So that the person who's sending is the one who makes the things tap. And when you want to send, then you open your key and start sending. What do we have to do? We have contention, right? Who has the right to send at any given time? Problem to be solved. People build networks this way. They solve that problem. Nobody has mentioned this one. Everybody wants to send to everybody else.
Well, make a wire to everybody else, from everybody else.
What's the problem?
Scalability.
How many wires does it take? Right? Which is big O
N squared.
Yes. Whereas this one is big O M. Yes. What was that all about?
All right. So, different problems, different solutions, different problems, different costs. This one is good in that everybody can be sending at the same time, right? You can't send to multiple people at the same time, but you could be sending at the same time. A lot more parallelism. Okay, next problem. Okay, the electrical circuit lets me make a click at the other end. How do I turn that into the ability to send messages? So this time, rather than coming up with answers, let's see what questions we can come up related to this issue of how do I turn clicks into messages? What are the issues that are going to come up in turning clicks into messages? Okay, so 2 minutes. Okay. All right. So, what are the issues involved in getting from click to message?
How do you convert an electric signal to actual noise, as opposed to just clicking?
Well, I've already got a way to make the noise, right? It's a armature and a couple pieces of metal that hit on each other. So that's what I mean by I can send clicking. Okay. How do I get from that clicking to actually being able to send messages? Yeah, the back. I have to send the messages in the same sort of like language. Yes. We haven't got a language, even one language. So what is our language going to be? So Morse code, right? That's what Samuel Morse invented to go with his clicker, was a language that involved what? Patterns of clicks,
patterns. So different patterns of clicks would stand for different letters. Now, the telegraph Morse code is not the same code that we know today as Morse code that has bits of dots that they're related. But because all you got was a click, you didn't really have the ability to make a continuous sound. So it was patterns of clicks. So I have a pattern that means a particular letter, and another pattern that means some other letter. How do I tell where one starts and the other ends?
Spacing between them?
Spacing between them, right?
Might come at different
So the general problem is called the framing problem. How do I tell where something starts and where it ends? One way to solve the framing problem is by putting an amount of space between the two things. And the human brain's processing of sound is able to sort of somehow distinguish that amount of space and say that letter is there and that letter is there. Okay, so now we have letters. Where do we have to go from letters? Words. Okay, so again, how do we tell the end of one word and the beginning of the next one? Another framing problem. More space, right? More time, right? More blank time, probably.
So you said you could have a specific pattern.
Yes. So we might have a particular pattern that has some sort of meta meaning about a boundary. So it turns out that at least in Morse code, we use the space to separate the time, lifetime, to separate letters and words. But now we're going to move up to sentences and whole messages. And there, indeed, we use special symbols to denote the end of a sentence, period, probably. The beginning of a paragraph, you can do that. The beginning, the end of a message as a whole, right? Those are all ways that the framing problem can be addressed. In electrical circuits, sometimes the framing, even at the character level, is expressed by special sequences of electrical signals that separate one character from another, not just space, but like the space character, right? We're very used to the space character in writing our code.
All right.
Okay, now we can send messages. How about a message has arrived? What are we supposed to do with it? So let's assume for the moment that we're doing store and forward. Message has arrived. The operator has copied it down. How does the operator know what to do with the message? At the moment, it's just a bunch of symbols on a piece of paper. Now something else has to happen. What are we gonna have to have in order to know what to do with the message? Who do we want to have it say? Somebody?
A destination
address. Okay.
I was going to say like a scheme, like have a standard by which a certain, like, I don't know, this much of the beginning has to be the destination, and then everything after that is the message or something like that.
Excellent. Because, I mean, suppose we have a standard that says that you, somewhere in the message, you have to write down the address of the recipient. Say the street address, the street and city of the recipient. What can happen if we don't do what he suggested? Maybe the message contains an address, and now there's confusion, right? You know, my message is supposed to go to my aunt in Cincinnati, telling her that she's supposed to write a letter to my uncle in Baltimore, It's got two addresses associated, right? So we need a standard to separate the address from the rest of the message. Yeah, we'll find that in the end. Okay, next problem. Oh, I'll say at this point that these things like addressing, where addresses go and so forth, are examples of what we call protocols. We're going to talk a lot about protocols and why they're called protocols before we finish the first chapter. Okay, next problem. So,
a telegraph operator
can send messages at the rate of about 60 words per minute, where a word is defined to be 5 characters. For the purpose of measuring performance of operators. A word is about 5 letters, and a letter is about 5 bits. So we're sending messages over these wires with human operators at around 1,500 bits per minute. Right? So what are expensive things in this? Time of the operators. How many skilled operators you have. The big issue with this network is its performance. How can we make operators more efficient? So that's our next little discussion point, is seeing if we can figure out the ways to make operators more efficient at sending messages. Okay? common letters like E. And in international Morse code, what we use on the radio today, the letter E is the very shortest possible symbol, right? It's just one dip, one short with the letter space on either side of it. So good encodings for the letters themselves, and then we'll take your idea and say, how about having short encodings for common words? So that will help as well. And then what the telegraph guys did was that, in order to get even better, they made up code books where they had short encodings for whole phrases that were common. Like, I will be arriving on the train at, you know, that whole thing might be three letters followed by a number that would be said. So that you can do data compression, right? That's what we call data compression. And in the case of the code books, that's a dictionary lookup compression. And in the case of the short letters for common words, that's just a good encoding. Okay.
Did all those. Okay. So we're getting there. We have to take a diversion from the digital realm into the analog realm, though, before we can get where we're going.
I was
going
to ask about that. Was it common for your message to be sent and received?
So, the question is, how reliable is this system for sending messages? I don't actually know, but it's certainly something that we should be concerned with, and we are concerned with in today's data network. I know that in amateur radio practice using Morse code, the check the message has been received correctly is, when using Morse code, is just the number of words in the message. And you have to learn the standards about which words count and which don't for that purpose, so that you can look at the number that was expected to be sent and the number that was received and check that. But as to the actual contents, I don't think that they use anything beyond the fact that this is essentially a digital communication medium. We trusted that the clicks would go through correctly and that the operators would transcribe correctly, but what frequency they were on the same.
Would it be very unreliable? Because if you think about the number of different letters and punctuation, if you have different lengths for each of those, then the number of different lengths, the possible number of different lengths is so big that you might have, you know, A be a certain length and then B be just a little bit bigger, so the two could get confused.
Yeah, framing errors of various kinds. Yep, that's certainly one kind of mistake. And another source of mistake might be sunspots of electrical interference that causes things to click unnecessarily. Less probably a problem with your telegraphs than radio telegraphs.
Okay, so what happened to telegraphs?
According to Wikipedia, in most countries, the telegraph networks, and they were not really telegraph networks, they were teletype networks, were shut down about 10 years ago. There was a system in India that ran until about 3 years ago, and it was shut down. So there aren't any telegraph networks operational anywhere anymore that we know of.
Commercially. Of course, people can always play. Okay.
So Now we're going to take a diversion into a few other things. So the telegraph was invented in 1840, right, and started to be used to connect cities around the eastern part of the United States. But the west, from about the Mississippi River out to the Pacific Ocean, was largely not connected by the telegraph at that time. So somebody had the idea of delivering mail by horse, express mail by horse, and that led to what was known as the Pony Express that connected Missouri with California. So how valuable is communication? The Pony Express operated for just a couple of years in 1860-1871. It cost $10 in the money of that time, which we think is probably more like $1,000 today, to send a one half ounce letter from Missouri to California. Can you believe that's how valuable certain communications are? And it took 10 days to do that. Quite amazing. It only lasted a couple of years because the Transcontinental Railroad got finished. It was being worked on and got finished, and along with that, they were able to string telegraph wires and telegraph coming. Okay, so we're getting there. We've done a digital form of communication, right? It's either click or no click. The next thing that happened in this space was the invention of the telephone. And again, the American myth is that the telephone was invented by Alexander Graham Bell. But other countries have other histories of the telephone. Although one could argue that Morse and Bell get credit because their systems were the ones that were actually bought. So next time we'll talk about the telephone, and we'll talk about what new problems arise associated with having analog instead of a digital. Okay? But
we don't you want to get it?
All right. So I came a bit late because I was struggling with